You're listening to DVD Talk Radio.
Greetings, CineSchlockers. Noel Gross here, and I've got four DVDs to look at with you. We've got Lust in Space, which has absolutely nothing to do with Lost in Space. We have, from Australia, the zombie movie Undead. And while we're talking zombies, we've got Day of the Dead 2 Contagion. And, of course, The Devil's Rejects, or as I like to call it, the greatest Freebird video ever made. I was a fan of House of a Thousand Corpses. I thought it, of course, it had its flaws. First-time director Rob Zombie probably went into his music video director's bag a little bit too much, changing film stocks as many times as they changed reels of film. But from an aesthetic side, The Devil's Rejects is a far superior film. It looks like a spaghetti western almost, these washed out colors and this overall sense of dread. But as I've touted many times, I got to go to the Comic-Con premiere of The Devil's Rejects, and if you click around on the column, you'll find some more audio there with some interviews with everybody from Jimmy Cracker, Brian Posehn, to Sid Haig and Ken Forey and the lovely Sherry Moon Zombie. All sorts of great folks there talking about the film, so check that out. But anyway, I went and saw the film with the group there, and it was full of great character moments, but at the end I had this weird sense that I'm like, well, how do I feel about this picture? I think a lot of us have seen movies like that, and then once we start to dwell on it a little bit, we start to pull out the different things that we really did like of it, and then we form an opinion at the end. So my opinion has grown on this picture, especially after watching the DVD. The parts that I really liked were reinforced, and the parts that kind of skeezed me out were also in there too. But then what I found most successful about it were really parts that were in the original House of a Thousand Corpses. And that's, remember the scene where the first Wydell was dismissed from this earth by Otis Driftwood with a long over-the-head shot in slow motion. Of course, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Well, it's those sort of grisly gun battle scenes that are the best parts of The Devil's Rejects, that go into this surreal other world quality when they go into slow motion. That's really sort of feels like a throwback to the era in which this movie is set, the 70s and probably the 60s. So there's sort of bookend gun battle scenes in this in Devil's Rejects. Of course, there's the opening scene with the Wydell, the brother, played by William Forsythe, who's also interviewed on the red carpet. He brings his group of Ruggsville's finest in there to rouse the Devil's Rejects out of their family home, and that doesn't go too well. And then, of course, at the end, well, as I mentioned, the greatest Freebird video ever made. What's Freebird's almost 10 minutes long, and Rob milks every bar of Freebird for that fantastic scene. And to hear him talk about it on the commentary, the whole film hinges on that. He started pretty much at the end and worked backwards. He wanted a fitting tribute to his characters, and from that end, he worked backwards to create a road picture that I'm sort of hard pressed to figure out how it is a horror movie. It's You know, characters like Dr. Satan are missing, and some of Captain Spaulding's more ghoulish elements are toned down. So it's more of a, I don't know, survival picture or just a serial killer movie. Because it does. It does have its very sort of earthy, connected, quasi-real moments of sadism, really. And also, too, that's a difference between House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil's Rejects. Anytime you went into any sort of overt, grotesque sadism or just really awful stuff that Otis might have going on, there was all sorts of weird filters and camera cuts and all sorts of things that pulled you out of the movie. None of that with Devil's Rejects, because it's shot in this very sort of documentary form, handheld, and you sort of feel like you're there in the scene, which is very unsettling. But as I say, as in total, I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of takeaway from this film, because really, as fans, we are invested in the characters, and we're given lots of good character moments. And I think this overall sense of depression comes because we sort of realize that we're not going to get to spend any more time with these characters, and that the fact that we've aligned ourselves with such sick, depraved people, because Rob really screws us around here. You know, he creates the good guy and the bad guy categories, and then he really mixes them up really in interesting ways. So I say that Devil's Rejects is about character moments, so let's look at, I think, the better character moments of the film. Sid Haig, Captain Spaulding, I think he's got all sorts of good stuff, but it's sort of a toss-up between his diddling scene with Ginger Lynn that changes in a very definite way that's quite amusing, or when he commandeers a vehicle for official clown business. That's not soon to be forgotten. Bill Moseley as Otis Driftwood. You know, of course, we all know what is sort of the standout scene there at the Kahiki Palms Motel, when you think about The Devil's Rejects, you think about the Kahiki Palms Motel and that one room and being stuck in there. And how long do you think you were really in there? I totaled it up. 15 minutes of screen time. You would think that it was much longer than that. And some of the scenes that you felt like probably were really long when, you know, Otis does certain things with the 45 and certain ladies' underpants. That, you know, that scene itself isn't as long as you think it is, because there's a just sickening tension there that even Bill had a real hard time with, and I guess anybody would if you had to do it six or seven or eight times on a movie set. But I don't think that's his best scene, and because I think Otis really shines when he goes on a little side trip with Banjo and Sullivan and to go pick up some guns. That I think is certainly Otis's finest scene. He gets back to his sort of Manson-esque orations from the first film, and then Sherry Moon Zombie. Oh, Sherry Moon, how we love Sherry! Well, I think she deserves some sort of extra prize for Heine acting. I don't know of any other actress in the history of horror cinema that has. That has shown her backside more on camera and to greater effect. And did she do the laugh? Not once did she do the laugh. And she says in the commentary that she did it in this deleted scene. And I you know, if she did, I don't think it was as pronounced as the original film. But, you know, that's again, Rob trying to pull the movie toward realism. I don't think... you know, as much as we love the cackling baby firefly, I don't think that that's quite as real. Second to Sherry's behind time, I would say, is Jeffrey Lewis when she seduces Jeffrey Lewis there at the Kahiki Palms Motel. And then there's Mother Firefly. Everybody knows we got a new Mother Firefly because Karen Black got a little... full of herself, I guess. I don't know. But Leslie Easterbrook does way more than Karen Black ever could. And she is OTT, over the top, in the greatest sense of the term. And I think that's when I remember one of the greatest applauses at the premiere is when Mother Firefly in shackles in Whitell's jail starts shouting about how, you know, she's going to see them all in hell or whatever it is, and she just whirls around in that chair. And then there's the freeze frame. Oh, that is a great moment for Leslie Easterbrook. Really brings a new level to Mother Firefly. And if you thought that was something, just wait until she dies. All right, well, that's probably enough talk about the film in particular. Probably should move on to DVD, but gosh, I gotta say just one more time that Rob has really redefined classic rock for me in a way, because he's really twisted my view of Freebird and to a certain extent Midnight Rider. I don't think I can listen to either of those songs again without thinking of the Devil's Rejects, and that's a good thing. I don't mind. All right. Two-disc special edition. Actually, it's a two-disc director's cut, if you want to get real specific, because there are a few little flashes of stuff that you didn't see in the theatrical run, which, you know, I having seen it at the theater myself, I could really pick out was some lingering ooh kind of stuff. The second disc is really devoted entirely to a documentary that runs 144 minutes. What the hell is with all these obnoxiously long making of documentaries? We had the same thing happen to us on The Fly. And then in retrospect, The Fly obnoxiously long making of documentary is way better than this one. This is called 30 Days in Hell, which, you know, I will avoid any sort of comparisons that I could make. But, you know, making a movie is oftentimes not that darn interesting. If you want to, you know, see an entertaining, engaging, amusing look at the filmmaking, go watch Project Greenlight or something like that. But 144 minutes of making The Devil's Rejects, I'm sorry, is just not that darn interesting. Especially when it's 45 minutes into the documentary and we were only up to day 4. God almighty. There were a couple of a few things in there that I will point out. The table reading was sort of fun. You got to see footage of Brian Posehn getting killed. And he's, of course, a very sort of wry, funny guy. It was especially interesting to see Kane Hodder at his day job, what he does most of the time, which is stunt coordination. And he, of course, did all the stunt work or coordinating of stunt work on The Devil's Rejects. So it's good to see Jason Voorhees, the real Jason. I don't care who you talk to. In my book, Kane is Jason. See him at work. And in part four, there's five parts of this documentary. And part four, I think if you were just going to punch in and watch one thing, check out part four, because that's got some really neat stuff about the shootouts. And as I said, I think that's really the strength of the picture is those really amazing shootouts. Okay, sadly, Matthew McGorry passed away not long after the film came out. And you'll notice in the commentaries there's really no mention of his passing. I think it, ordinarily there would be, because what there is right before the title, the credit sequence, there's a in loving memory, little note to Matthew as the credits roll. And it's especially poignant because, you know, of the tone of the last part of the film. I don't want to dwell on it too much. But that, you know, it was really nice that they went back in and redid the credit roll to include Matthew in that way. They also did a nice little they did squeeze in a little B-roll of Matthew and little on-set interviews with him as sort of a tribute to him, and that's a nice addition to the DVD. I'm glad they were able to get both of those things in, even, you know, after the commentaries were recorded and all that sort of thing. Also, second is deleted scenes. There's 13 minutes of deleted scenes, but what you want to know is the Dr. Satan scene in there, and yes, it is. And I guess that's maybe I'm too hard on the making of documentary, because you do get to see some of the working of that scene. Because in the actual play of the scene, you don't really get a good look at Dr. Satan, and on the documentary, you do. So maybe I need to ease up. You also get a good look at Rosario Dawson, who people have different feelings about her. I happen to have really good feelings about her, and I won't dwell on it any further than that. But she gets bloodied in a very interesting way, very graphic way, and. And yet, I don't think you'll think of a crisp white nurse's uniform in quite the same way anymore. And also, if you're a fan of Michael Berryman of The Hills Have Eyes, well, he's got three scenes on the cutting room floor, so he did have a larger role in the film as Ken Foree, Charlie Altamont's sidekick. They've got two great Captain Spaulding commercials, one that wasn't even featured in the film. Those commercials and the Morris Green show that remind us that Rob does have a sense of humor. And it doesn't play out in the menus as it so famously did in the House of a Thousand Corpses DVD with Tiny doing unpleasant things to a stump and whatnot. But you get a whole episode of the Morris Green show starring Daniel Roebuck as Morris Green. Now, Daniel's a big horror fan, big Universal horror fan, and I'm going to put a link up on the website to his collection of monster memorabilia, which makes me feel a lot better about my office here at Cineschlock Aroma HQ, because I've got nothing on this guy, man. He's got all kinds of good stuff. So check that out. It's amusing. It's what the fireflies were watching there at the motel, so it's sort of neat. And then, of course, we have two commentaries, and I think Rob Zombie has really come into his own in commentaries. I found this commentary way more engaging than the House of a Thousand Corpses commentary, because I think he opens up a lot more and talks dispassionate way about the film, and not that he gets all lovey-dovey or anything, but he has interesting things to say. More interesting than in the documentary. I keep harping on that, don't I? And then I was thinking that the cast commentary would be a lot more fun than it turned out to be. It was with Sherry and Sid and Bill. Of course, Bill is always a very wicked wit. I was hoping that Sid would kind of pop in more. But actually, the woman at the wheel is Sherry, and she sort of seems to feel like she needs to point out what's going on the screen, and we all know how annoying that can be. So, overall, I think the DVD rates really well, especially, I think, in extras. We got a lot of good stuff, and I think that maybe Cineschloggers are going to enjoy the documentary a little bit more than I did. But, again, I would say punch in for part four. If you dig that, then, wade around into the other stuff and see what you feel about that. But I think there's a lot of overlap with the commentaries and all that sort of thing. Highly recommended on that. 4 stars for the movie. House of a Thousand Corpses, I rated 3.5 stars. And while I have same level of affection in different ways for both films, yeah, I'm going to give an extra half star for improvement on Rob's part. And just the sheer fact that we get to spend more time with some fantastic new characters that Rob has brought to the horror scene. Just think about that. We've got 4 distinct characters. Mother Firefly, Baby Firefly, Captain Spaulding, and Otis Driftwood, all of which are in their own right. Very interesting and fun characters added to the genre, and they're all from Rob Zombie. And of course, the respective actors, but they're from his script, so... But I nobody else could be Captain Spaulding, and nobody else could be Bill Moseley. I'm sorry, Bill Moseley's the only one who could be Otis Driftwood. Anyway, all right, let's move on to Undead. I think I'm having a little bit of zombie overload because I've got 2 zombie films here. One, we'll get to that other one in a minute. But Undead is. Is from Australia, and some of the extra features, somebody asked them, hey, why'd you make this thing? And well, they said, when you want to make movie, make a zombie. You want to make money, make a zombie movie, or something to that effect. And I guess it's honest, but it doesn't necessarily make for a good zombie film. I think maybe Cineschloggers will dig this one a little bit more. I had sort of the same feeling about Dead and Breakfast. I just didn't buy into the comedy aspects of the zombiness. Some people just relish that and love to sit around with their buddies and watch that kind of stuff. You know, maybe that's the sort of film it is, and I just didn't have enough buddies or enough beer to make this as funny as it ought to be. And it's got weird stuff like a fisherman that wears cowboy spurs and runs around shooting guns two at a time, and has a wild shotgun contraption where he's, you know, laced up I think three shotguns together for one boomtastic boom, you know. But when ammunition is in short supply, why are you loading up three shotguns at a time to blow stuff away? I don't understand that. And and it has a zombie fish, and somehow aliens are involved in this. And if somebody can explain to me the aliens got involved in the first place. First, it's some sort of meteor that falls, and there's a meteor shower that turns people into zombies, and then something about the aliens have to seal off the town. Are they trying to help the people? And by helping people, are you turning them into zombies? Is that really helping them? I clearly don't understand this movie, but lots of splatter and sort of some CGI splatter used to good effect. Because it's mixed with the practical stuff to make it a lot more interesting. Lots of extras on this thing. Lionsgate's packed it full of good stuff. If you're a fan of the picture, I enjoyed most of the Q&A at the Toronto Film Festival. I like to see those sorts of things because they're questions from fans, and they're right after the movie. So, you know, it's the sort of stuff that I think that Cineschlockers would like to know. And, well, there it is right there on the DVD. So that's going to be 2.5 stars. I'm going to recommend that just for mostly for the GRU and for the offhand chance that Cineschlockers would want to check it out. And I don't want to tell them not to, not that I would. That moves us on to Day of the Dead Contagium, or as they say in the movie, Contagium, even though it was filmed in Los Angeles. Now, basically the origin of this movie is because the company who produced it still had the rights to Day of the Dead, so they were like, hey, zombies are big, we've got rights to Day of the Dead, why the hell not make a sequel to Day of the Dead, even though we don't really know how it connects or anything? I'd like somebody to explain to me what this has to do, anything to do with the Romero zombie movies, because it has nothing really that I can tell. And also, the whole movie hinges on a thermos. Now let's think about this for a minute. A thermos. Well, if you were wandering out in a field and found a thermos, would you pick it up? No. Would you pick it up and say, treasure? You know, would you think, ooh, I gotta hang on to this thermos? Well, that's what the whole movie hinges on, because that's where you get your second outbreak of zombie. Again, I think there's some sort of weird connection to aliens or some sort of thing, because when the zombie virus or whatever comes floating out of this little vial, you know, it doesn't seem very of this world to me. And I don't want to get on too much of a bagging of this film, because I think it's just in its existence is a bag in and of itself. But I'm going to give it half a star, and I'm going to say rent it if you have to, out of dire curiosity. And that half star is exclusively to gore, and even that is probably the worst zombie effects I've ever seen, short of I Was a Teenage Zombie, which I think had purple people zombies. Finally, we've got Lust in Space, and as I said, that has absolutely nothing to do with Lost in Space. What it actually is, from Seduction Cinema, it's a sequel to The Erotic Witch Project. Yes, the fourth installment of The Erotic Witch Project, because John Backus is back. Yes, the great John Backus. We're big fans of him at Cineschlockerama. But, sorry, this is not... This is not John's best work here. I'm going to give this 1 star, and I'm going to say rent it. And that is, in case you want to see the enormous talents of Miss Alexia Moore, who in the extras explains that she's a 32 double F. And I'm pretty sure that doesn't happen in nature, because she fills the screen with her her enormous talent, I'm clearly tongue-tied about that. There's actually a intimate interview with her and Jackie Stevens as a DVD extra that bleeds into a really pretty terrible little fantasy vignette between Alexia and Jackie, who was a featured performer in G-String Divas, that HBO documentary. But anyway, back to the plot, or the... actually, there is no plot getting in the way of the story with Lust in Space, because pretty much a full 58 minutes of the 86-minute running time are devoted to some sort of cavorting of one kind or another. There's 8 different scenes of all sorts of lesbian loving, and actually some heterosexual, pretty graphic heterosexual canoodling at one point there toward the end. That 1 star I give to for John's scene of having AJ and did I say AJ Khan? She's sort of the big star of this movie, and she's really probably one of the better actors of the Seduction Cinema ensemble, and I think she bears that out to the best of her ability here, in more than one meaning of bear that out. And she has a scene in with Darian Kane, the always lovely Darian Kane, who. For a while there, she'd been in a lot of, movies where she was playing Dracula, and I thought maybe it was the fangs that were making her talk weird, but I think it's her darn tongue piercing, because she doesn't have fangs in this one, and she still can't talk. It sounds like her tongue's swollen up. Come on, Darian, let's do something about that. Anyway, there's a scene, I've tried this 3 times to get to this, there's a scene that John does where he does a split screen between AJ and Darian as their, they're from the future, going back to the erotic witch land, and they're trying to figure out, how the erotic witch virus got started. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit fuzzy on the plot from the original movie, it's, being classic and all. Anyway, there's AJ and Darian on one side of the screen, and then there's AJ and Darian and John on the other side of the screen, but AJ and Darian aren't really AJ and Darian, are they? No, they're dudes. He puts these beards on them, and we're supposed to believe that AJ Khan and Darian Kane could ever pass for being men. I think we know that is next to impossible. So, Lust in Space, not really John's greatest work. Let's hope that Kinky Kong is a lot better. Kinky Kong, the spoof of, obviously, if you can't figure out what that's a spoof of, then maybe I don't need to tell you. Jackie Stevens, though, has a very good point in her intimate interview, which I clearly have watched all of because it's toward the end. She says, stop watching videos and go out and meet someone. And I think that's good advice to all of us out there, but not necessarily good advice if you want to continue your career at Seduction Cinema, Jackie. That's not really, really smart. Okay, in summation, we've got Devil's Rejects, the 2-disc special edition. That's going to get 4 stars. It's going to be highly recommended. We've got Undead, 2.5 stars, recommended. Day of the Dead 2, Contagium, absolutely repugnant in every way. 0.5 star on that, rent that. Lust in Space, it's got too much gratuitous nudity to not be 1 star, so I'm going to give it 1 star, and that's going to be a rent it. I guess that about does it for another Schlockcast, so brings us to a very important part of the Schlockcast, and that is when we give away stuff. So I'm going to reach into my gunny sack of goodies, but I'm only going to do it for the first 5 people that can list all of the zombie movies to come out of Night of the Living Dead. You had Night of the Living Dead, and then you had two distinct branches of zombie food movies. List those off for me. And the first five of you who do that and email me at feedback@cineschlockerama.com. That's feedback@cineschlockerama.com. We'll receive a DVD from my gunny sack of goodies. And we got some good stuff in there, like Day of the Dead 2 and Lust in Space and some other stuff. Anyway, this has been Noel Gross with the Cine Schlockerama Schlockcast. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to DVD Talk Radio. Find DVD Talk Radio online at dvdtalkradio.com.